take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, it's the 29th of April 2019. I hope you all had a great weekend and you're raring to go for the week ahead. On today's show, we are going to be talking about type 2 diabetes. We'll also be covering the subject of Helicobacter pylori, which I'm sure many of you will go, what? But actually, Helicobacter pylori is a bacteria that you need to know about. We've also got songs from Pink and from Stevie Wonder. And on today's show, our special guest is Rebecca Daniel from Jigsaw Education. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Neil.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you very, very much. I'm excited to be here.
And we'll find out more about Rebecca's background in about 20 minutes or so. So before we kick the show off, a quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can find the show's Facebook page. You can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And you can also find the show's iTunes podcast. Just go to iTunes and type in the Health Matters Radio Show, and all previous 59 shows will be there for you to listen to. So, a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover, and to educate you and inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 first or speaking with your local pharmacist. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So for those of you who know me, you'll know that in addition to being a nutritionist, one of my specialisms is dealing with type 2 diabetes, and is a subject that I've covered in the past on the show. But it's a very important one because diabetes, type 2 diabetes specifically, is becoming a bigger and bigger problem as time progresses, despite the so-called initiatives that have been put in place to actually stem the tide. To put it in perspective, in 1996, there were 1.4 million diagnosed type 2 diabetics in the UK. We've just hit the 4 million mark in just over 20 years. It's anticipated that we'll be at 5 million in the next 5 to 7 years. And around 700 people a day are still being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. But the scary numbers are the people that have diabetes but don't yet know they've got it. Okay, so type 2 diabetes can take a long time to develop, anything up to 10 years. And during that 10 years, it can do a tremendous amount of damage to the body, but have no symptoms. And you will only get symptoms when you get to a point where your body just can't cope anymore. And that doesn't mean that you've only just picked up diabetes or it's just developed. That has been developing probably for anything up to 5 to 10 years. So in this country, there are, in addition to the 4 million people who are diagnosed, there's another million, it's estimated, that have it right now, but don't know they've got it. And there's another, anything up to 7 million people who, if they don't change their diet and their lifestyle, are probably going to get type 2 diabetes over the next 10 years. So potentially, we're looking at around 12 million people. which as a percentage of the population of the UK is a huge amount of people. And part of my mission, and many of you know my mission, is to educate 100 million people over the next 10 years to either prevent, to manage, or to reverse type 2 diabetes. This is the reason why I'm doing this piece, is to actually say to you, well, listen to your body, see if you recognise some of these symptoms, because if you recognise some of these symptoms, you may be one of that 7 million people that are going to get type 2, or you might actually be one of the 1 million people that have it, but don't actually realise that you have it at the moment. Excuse me. So type 1 and type 2, many of you have heard of diabetes. There are two main types. So type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is an autoimmune condition, and only about 1 in 10 people with diabetes has type 1. The other 90% have type 2. So type 2 is not an autoimmune condition, and in my opinion, type 2 is completely within a person's control. Because it's often their diet and their lifestyle and their health regime that's led them to develop type 2 diabetes. And there is a correlation between body weight and type 2, but it's not always the case. A good friend of mine, he doesn't weigh more than about 10, 11 stone. He has type 2 diabetes. Okay, and I have clients that weigh 20 stone, also have type 2 diabetes. So there is a correlation between weight, but it's not always the be-all and end-all. So if you are of a healthy weight, don't fool yourself into thinking that this doesn't apply to you. So as I mentioned, around 700 people a day are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and the disease has been raging inside their body for years and years and years. And it's only when they get symptoms that they think, oh, maybe I should go and get it checked out. It might be perhaps they're going to the toilet a lot, particularly during the night, or it might be they have intermittent blurred vision. There's a few symptoms that we're going to discuss in a few moments that you should make a note of, because even if it doesn't apply to you, it may apply to someone that you know. So type 2 diabetes used to be very rare in children. It was called the middle-aged person's disease. But as obesity rates have increased and also poor quality of diet choice and lifestyle has been on the rise, then around half the new diagnosis of type 2 diabetes are in children and in young adults. And I think there was a case last year in America where there was a 3-year-old that was diagnosed with type 2. So when you consider that type 2 is pretty much not a disease that you catch or that is outside your control, it's quite scary that children now are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, when in fact, years ago, it was only the 40 plus, or the majority of people were sort of 40 plus. So type 2 diabetes does a lot of damage to the body. There is a big link now between type 2 diabetes and dementia, particularly Alzheimer's. And in some circles, actually dementia is being called type 3 diabetes, because a lot of people that have dementia also are type 2 diabetics. And that research is still ongoing, but it's believed that the reason that type 2 diabetes can be a big cause of dementia is the sustained high levels of blood glucose and equally the sustained levels of high insulin as well. But that research is ongoing, but there is a fairly strong link between type 2 diabetes and Alzheimer's. Type 2 diabetes also does a lot of damage to the heart. It can cause narrowing of the blood vessels, which can damage the heart muscle. It can make the heart work harder, which can lead to a condition called enlarged heart. And like any muscle, the harder you work it, the bigger it gets. And trust me, your heart is one muscle you do not want to get bigger. So it doesn't work quite as well as it should do. It doesn't pump as efficiently as it could do. That also puts a lot of strain and can cause things like cardiovascular issues and heart attacks and strokes. As I mentioned, with the eyes, it can lead to hemorrhaging, so it can lead to bleeding in the eyes, that's high blood glucose, and that's called diabetic retinopathy, and that can lead to blindness. But that damage, that blindness, will often be preceded by periods of blurry vision, and blurry vision is one of the symptoms that we're going to come on to in a moment. But if you get intermittent blurry vision, that can be a symptom of undiagnosed type 2 diabetes. And in fact, in this country, type 2 diabetes is the leading cause of blindness. It can also damage the feet and nervous system. Type 2 diabetes is the leading cause of foot amputation in this country. But also, if you don't go as far as amputation, it can damage the nerves of the body. So you can get tingling, you can get burning sensations, you can get pain, and you can get numbness, where actually the high blood glucose is damaging your nerves. It can also lead to wounds taking longer to heal. And it puts a lot of strain on your kidneys. If you get to a point where you're starting to urinate glucose, you put a lot of strain onto the kidneys, and that, in addition, can cause long-term kidney damage. So as I mentioned, these symptoms can go undiagnosed for up to 10 years. So if you can relate to some of these symptoms, perhaps you or someone close to you, then don't put it down to just getting older. You know, lots of people that go to the toilet more go, well, you know, I'm 40, I'm 50, I'm 60, whatever it might be. It might not be just bladder issues, as an example. It might not just be getting older. It could actually be undiagnosed type 2 diabetes. So here's some symptoms that you might want to think about. Again, not just for yourself, but perhaps your loved ones or friends or family. So increased thirst. Part of the mechanism of dealing with high blood glucose is to urinate more. And that obviously then leads to dehydration, which can lead to constant thirst. Even when you drink, it doesn't quench your thirst. It can lead to increased hunger. And this happens when your body cells are deprived of glucose for energy. So whilst there's a lot of glucose going around your body, the cells are not getting the energy. So they're sending off signals to your brain that they're being deprived. So constant hunger can be a symptom of type 2 diabetes. Dry mouth, well, it goes along with increased thirst. If you're constantly urinating, then that can lead to dehydration and a dry mouth. Going to the toilet, well, we've kind of covered that already, but one of the mechanisms that the body uses as a last resort to just get rid of all that excess glucose is it will employ the kidneys to dump the glucose into your urine. That will obviously cause lots of periods of urination. You know, we go to the toilet X number of times a day. But if you're going to the toilet on a regular basis, then again, you might want to get it checked out. If you get urinary tract infections because of the glucose that's being passed out through the kidneys, well, that glucose is the perfect breeding ground for yeast infections. So if you get constant infections down there, then that can be a symptom of undiagnosed type 2 diabetes. Fatigue and headaches, they go together. Blurred vision, well, we've covered blurred vision already, but again, if you get intermittent periods where your vision just goes in for a second, that could be a symptom. And again, when you have your eyes tested, you'll probably note that they do check for retinopathy, diabetic retinopathy, as part of the eye test. And if you haven't had an eye test for a couple of years, maybe that will be a good time to have your eyes checked out. And also slow healing of cuts and grazes. The way it affects your body, the way it affects the body's nerves as well, is if you get cuts and grazes, but they're just taking a lot longer to heal, that can be a symptom of type 2 diabetes. So in isolation, for example, you know, if you're thirsty a lot, that might not be a sign that you've got type 2. But if you can relate to some of those symptoms, or perhaps they've been, you know, getting worse as time has progressed over the last few years, then perhaps it is time to have a chat with your doctor. And if you haven't had a blood test done in a little while, just rule out type 2 diabetes. Because again, if you are onset type 2, knowing about it sooner is better than knowing about it later. Because if you leave it to do its thing, over many, many years, it can cause a lot of damage to the body. Okay, the good thing is that you can prevent type 2 diabetes. If you're carrying too much weight, then losing some body weight, specifically body fat, specifically belly fat, can be a step in the right direction to preventing type 2. You can improve your diet, so cut down on the refined carbohydrates, cut down on grains, on potatoes, cut down on sugar. If you like sugary drinks, then cut down on those as well. Don't be fooled into thinking that the artificially sweetened drinks are better for you. They cause the same problems, but they just cause it from a different pathway. artificially sweetened drinks have been proven to contribute to type 2 diabetes and also to obesity because of the way they act on the body. So just because it's green on the label and it has no sugar in it does not mean it's healthy. And also more exercise. A lot of people, you know, in today's society, particularly in the UK, we're a very sedentary people. And actually getting exercise in on a regular basis, even if it's just going for a walk for a mile or two every day, that can be a step in the right direction. And if you're concerned about your health, particularly with type 2, then please speak to your doctor before making any changes. Talk to them if you can relate to any of those symptoms, or you can contact me via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and we will have a chat. So hopefully you found that useful. It is a subject that I will be revisiting from time to time because it's such a big problem in this country and we do need to deal with it. Okay, so after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Rebecca. But before then, we have the latest song from Pink.
There's something in the way you roll your eyes. Takes me back to a better time. When I saw everything is good. But now you're the only thing that's good. Trying to stand up on my own two feet. This conversation ain't coming easily. And darling, I know it's getting late. So what do you say we leave this place? Walk me home in the day tonight. I can't be alone with all that's on my mind. So say you'll stay with me tonight. Cause there is so much wrong. There's something in the way I wanna cry that makes me think we'll make it out alive. So come on and show me how we're good. I think that we could do some good. Mm-hmm. Walk me home in the dead of night. I can't be alone with all that's on my mind. Mm-hmm. So say there is so much wrong going on outside. Ooh. 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 Walk me home in the dead of night. Cause I can't be alone with all that's on my mind. Say you'll stay with me tonight. Cause there is so much wrong going on. Walk me home in the dead of night. I can't be alone with all that's on my mind. So say you'll stay with me tonight. Cause there is so
that's Pink and Walk Me Home, her latest hit off her new album. Quick plug for her because I think she's great. Okay, so you're listening to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, at Health Radio Show, you can follow the show's Twitter feed there. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters radio show, you can find the show's Facebook page. You can like the page and be kept up to date with all developments and guests and other information about the show. You can listen again to this show on the show's iTunes podcast. So go to iTunes and type in the Health Matters radio show. And you can find all the previous shows on the media page of my website too, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And actually, if you'd like to contact me away from the show, away from social media, perhaps it's a personal health issue you've got, maybe you're a type 2 diabetic or someone that needs to lose some weight, if you'd like to contact me via the show privately, then please feel free to do so via the contact page. Okay, so on to our special guest interview of the morning. Today we have Rebecca Daniel, and Rebecca is from Jigsaw Education. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning. I like the introduction of special. That's nice.
Absolutely. Every guest is special. Now, it's interesting because Rebecca's angle is slightly different to normal guests that I get on the show. As regular listeners will know, I tend to get people that work obviously within the health and wellness umbrella, not people that do what I do, but people that complement what I do. And that leads to like physiotherapists and personal trainers and people that very obviously work within the health industry. But Rebecca's angle is a bit different, but it does relate to health, physical health, and also mental health and well-being too. And we'll explain more as we go through and talk with Rebecca. So Rebecca, let's start with your background. Tell us a bit about your journey prior to getting into doing what you're doing now.
So I graduated from university with a degree in journalism, so print and broadcast journalism. Mm-hmm. I was working in the industry for a little bit and started to realize, and no offense, but started to realize that some of the journalists struggled with their literacy. So I took the role as a sub-editor. So I started to edit their texts.
Okay.
And that led me down the path of education because I felt like there was a route that I needed to go down to see where the problems lay.
Right.
So I've been in secondary education for 10 years and I've recently left to pursue literacy development in the community to see how we can eliminate or at least help to eliminate some of the literacy issues that we have in society.
And this is where the interesting link comes in, isn't it? Because we were talking prior to the show going on now, and you were telling me about someone that you knew that had issues accessing, was it a government website?
Yeah. So I realised just by educating young people that although we were focusing a lot on their examinations, that they didn't have literacy skills. And what I mean by that is they didn't have the basic knowledge to read and decode information, either in text, posters, leaflets. And then that led me down into adult life, because if we don't tackle that when they're younger, then when they get to adult life and they have to fill in forms for job applications or benefits or, you know, school applications for their children, then they struggle with that. So that's kind of where my path is leading me at the moment.
And it's interesting because those of us that are literate, and there are degrees of literacy, but those of us that can fill these forms in quite easily take that skill for granted. And we forget that there are people that really have trouble. Mm. And in that particular example, I think it was someone that was, they were looking to claim benefits of some description. Yeah. If they're not able to access the forms and they can't fill the forms in, that can be incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
They may be perhaps too embarrassed to ask for help.
Exactly.
If they're not getting the benefits they need, that could lead to them becoming nutritionally deficient because they can't buy the food they need to be healthy. Mm-hmm. That stress can lead to depression and anxiety. So there is a really, really strong link between education, literacy, and actual physical and mental health.
I agree. And it's good that you've gone through the path and the journey, because I would consider myself to be literate. Mm-hmm. And I looked at some of these government documents, hospital forms, doctor's registration forms, universal credit
forms. They're almost designed so that people go, I give up.
It's really easy to give up. And it took me, you'd think it would take me half an hour. I honestly think it took me about 2 hours to complete all these forms.
Wow.
Because I had to make sure that I read the information, the guidance notes that are accompanied with it, which is another 20-page document. I had to make sure that I could call the advice helpline. And then when you get to the advice helpline, you have to be able to articulate your problem. Mm. And if you can't do that, they can't help you. Mm. You have to navigate your way to the job centre. And if you can't go online, so everything's on Google now. Not everyone has an A to Z.
Other search engines are available.
There are a few. But if you can't navigate your way online, how are you going to navigate yourself to the job centre, or how are you going to log on to the sites and book the appointments? Mm. How are you going to read the messages that they send to you? And you're right. It just makes people feel anxious. It creates a lot of stress on people mentally, physically, and they start to give up. And it's better for them to say, I can't do it. because obviously motivation and self-esteem gets affected as well. I can't do it. I'm just going to stay at home.
Yeah.
But then if you don't do it, you can lead down the route of not paying your rent or your bills.
Mm-hmm.
You get those letters through your door. You can't read them. You can't respond to them. You can't write the letter of complaint or the letter of dispute. And then you can end up being homeless.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important. And this is why I'm really excited to be here with you today, because I think it's really important to not just think about education as your GCSEs or as your degree, but think of it as a life skill, a vital life skill.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be an A grade student, or we're in grades now, so number 9. You don't have to be a top level student to be able to be literate. You just have to have basic literacy skills.
Yeah. And these forms, these government forms, as we mentioned, can be so specific in the way that you fill them in as well. You know, the slightest mistake and they'll just reject it.
Yeah.
And I think I think it's important that we touched on that stress and the anxiety, because actually stress and anxiety will cause depression if it's not dealt with.
Yeah. And it's not even just depression, because as you know, people can fall into drug and alcohol abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You could have people that are really insecure and it could lead to domestic violence. You could have people that have antisocial behaviour and they lead to crime. And all of this is health related, not just mental, but physical as well, as you've seen. And as I've explained to you, and I think it's just really, really important that we work together as a community, not just to educate, but to support people that are struggling, to know that there are people out there that can help them, to help them to accomplish what they want to accomplish, and to help them get through that trying period.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So let's fast forward a bit then. So you've been in education for the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
After the birth of your first child,
yeah.
what was that change that happened then?
It's funny what children do to you.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Oh God, they flip you completely. But no, I had my daughter, and I started reading to her, and my partner thinks I'm crazy, but I started reading to her from the womb.
Okay.
I would read to her, talk to her, play music to her, we'd dance. And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Research shows that if you start the development from home, you know, that it can have a really, really beneficial impact on their life."
Mm.
And I thought to myself that not every child has that
right
from the beginning. Not every child has that lovely, positive learning environment.
Mm-hmm.
And their parents could actually have struggled with literacy. So they then, if they are struggling, can't support their own children. And so that's where I had my daughter, and I felt like I just needed to make sure that I could support the younger generation, but also support their parents. Because I feel quite grateful that my parents supported me through that. You know, I used to hate my dad because he used to make me sit down and read and do homework and times tables. But now I'm so grateful for that time that he gave to my education. And that's when I had my daughter, I just felt like not every child has that lovely start in the beginning. And I wanted to make sure that every child had that, and their parents knew that their support.
That's really interesting, because we were talking about nature and nurture, weren't we? In relation to type 2 diabetes during the break. And actually, in the same way as there can be genetic influences, so, you know, children can get the same illnesses as their parents in some degree. The child's life is going to be massively influenced by the parents.
Yeah.
And that might be in terms of their diet, their lifestyle, their education, as you say. You know, if you've got parents that are, if you've got adults that are relatively illiterate, then that may feed into, how that child develops as well.
And it was like I was explaining to you, which is what I've learned about the labels on our packaging. Again, I would consider myself to be literate. But actually not educated as to what is in our food.
Mm-hmm.
So if I didn't come onto the show today and learn that not all the green labels are great on the bottles, my daughter would then pick that up, wouldn't she?
Mm-hmm.
So she, when she gets to her teens, she would go to the supermarket and go, mummy looks for the green and orange labels.
Mm.
We're not going to go for the red labels. And she'll start picking that up.
Yep.
So it's about seeing how we can educate people in so many different ways, financially, health, physical well-being, not just academic.
Yeah.
So it's really important. It does have a knock-on effect.
It does, yeah. So what happened in December 2018? There was obviously a shift in at the back end of last year. You took quite a big leap, didn't you?
Yeah, So I had my daughter in 2017, returned back to work, and I love what I do. I love educating. I just felt like I needed time. I needed time and space to do that. And so I left my job in December just because I knew that 2019 was going to be the year of discovery for me, the year where I took risks, stepped out of my comfort zone, put myself out there, came on Channel Radio. yeah, it was just the year where I felt like I needed to make sure that my message is known and heard. So yeah, that was the shift.
So there was that realization that you perhaps had some sort of mission.
Yeah, that was it. Because again, being in a classroom, you are restricted because you have the GCSE exams to contend with. You have to make sure that that's what you're teaching to. And although I respect teachers because I am one, we don't have necessarily the time to focus on literacy skills. We don't have the time to say to these students, okay, we're going to take you into a room today to help you learn how to fill in an application form.
Right.
We don't have the time for that.
So you were working within really tight parameters
to a
very tight structure?
Yeah, I would say that. And although, the schools that I've been in have been quite respectful of me because I'm a bit wacky and I like to be a bit out there, we still had a job to do and we still had to make sure these students passed their grades and achieved what they needed to achieve academically. And so now it's me on a mission to try and see how I can work with people and give them that time that they don't have, because now I have the time and the freedom to do that.
Yeah. Excellent. Mm. Excellent. So for people that are listening out there to the show this morning and on catch up, what kind of people are you looking for? How do your services help individuals specifically?
Yeah, so I've been on a bit of a journey in the last, I would say, 18 months. I originally started working with parents to see how I could help them support their children. Now I'm going down the route of working with schools to see how I can support them within school, but deliver programs and workshops for their students that they have identified as needing help. I'm really, really fortunate to be working with other social organisations that the students haven't been in school for certain reasons or another.
Okay.
And so I'm finding that I'm drawn more to the disadvantaged community just because I feel like someone needs to be there for them. So I'm open, and I know that sounds really silly, and I always feel like I can help everyone, and I try to, but I would say schools and social organisations such as job centres, young offenders, young parents and other organisations like that, I'd love to be able to support them and support their youths and their teenagers.
Okay, so if there's someone out there listening that perhaps may not be a client for you, but they may be able to connect you with an organisation or a group where you could talk to the group, I mean, what types of groups are you actually looking for?
Yeah, so I originally said that I wanted to work with young people between the ages of 8 to 18.
Okay.
But even if you're an individual, I'm always willing to help people, give advice and support. So if you're a parent and you don't fall into that social organisation that I'm looking to work with, still get in touch, because I'm happy to talk to you. And it may just be a conversation, just a discussion to see what your current practices are at home, and how I can support you with that. And I'm always willing to help people, regardless if you don't fall into that category or not.
So you can work with individuals as well as bigger groups?
I'm happy to work with individuals.
With groups as well?
Yeah, I love to work with people on a mass scale.
Yeah.
And that's why I think social organisations and schools is a great opportunity, because you have numbers. And so rather than impacting one-to-one...
It's a better use of your time, isn't
it? Exactly. Rather than impacting one-to-one, you can impact one-to-many.
Yeah.
And that's where I would love to go, because hopefully from one-to-many, that has an impact and they'll tell somebody else about me, and you can meet and attract more people that way and help more people that way.
Yeah. So as you work with people and you help them to develop their literacy skills, how do you see that change in them? How do you see that change in self-esteem, for example?
100%. So if, for example, if I developed a workshop or a program, it wouldn't just improve their ability to read and understand texts and be able to speak in a way where it's effective and coherent. I strongly believe that it will boost their leadership, their self-esteem, their collaborative working, their resilience, their time management. So in addition to developing literacy skills in reading, writing, speaking and listening, I do believe that it will have a knock-on effect on other skills and behaviours. And I love to see if I can raise awareness of other social issues within my programmes. So I've developed a programme recently which was working with a local charity in Gravesend, the Molly McLaren Foundation. And they work towards raising awareness of eating disorders, which fits in perfectly with ethos. And so how we were working together was we were going to develop a programme for teenagers to raise awareness of eating disorders, but also by developing their reading, writing, speaking and listening. So the students would create leaflets, they would go out into the streets and fundraise and communicate with people, they'd pitch ideas, they'd develop posters and helpful guides for people and to learn about the impacts of eating disorders and how you can help. So it's a holistic view. When I say that I'm working with people to develop literacy, reading, writing, speaking and listening, there's so much more to it. In terms of the results that it can have.
And certainly one of the things I've learned as we've been talking is there is a big difference between education and literacy.
Yes.
It's almost like, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but education is the knowledge.
Yeah.
And literacy is almost putting that knowledge into practice.
Yeah, so it's the skill. So I always say to people, because I'm an English teacher by profession, people seem to think that English and literacy is the same. Now, there are very, very close links, but with the development of literacy skills, you as a person will be able to, like as a student, you'd be able to tackle geography questions, history questions, maths, science. And so within my work, I also do work with schools to train their other teachers, so their science teachers, geography teachers, history teachers, to develop literacy because it has an impact on all the other subjects.
Very interesting.
See, there's a lot more to it, Neil.
You can see how it all interlinks.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are your plans for the coming year? Obviously, you know, in December 2018, you took that big step, which is exciting and I'm sure daunting at the same time.
Very scary.
Where do you see 2019 taking you?
This year, I see myself as being more visible. And by that, I mean making sure that people are aware that there is someone out there to help them.
Yeah.
I think that's the first step. Once I become more visible, I think it's then educating. And it's not just educating the students. It will be educating those people that work with them to show them the impact that it can have on their lives. And then once I go from there, it will be delivering programs.
And ideally to many as well as to individuals.
Definitely to many. So I'm looking at working... I don't like name dropping. Do you do that? Yeah.
If you want to.
I'm looking to work with a social organisation that deals with young parents. And a college has given them the opportunity to have free access to their MVQs.
If it helps to mention them, then please do.
So the YMCA is that they're an amazing organisation that work with young parents.
Definitely.
Yeah. And a college has given them the opportunity to access all of their MVQs online. And so the amazing part of that is that these young people haven't been given those opportunities before for several reasons. And so working with them to help them accomplish what they need to accomplish is a great thing for me. Mm-hmm. And that's working one to many. And when I've become successful in helping them to pass their literacy test, it'll just be an amazing accomplishment to see them actually doing something good for themselves and for their children.
Excellent. And, I hear you've got something special coming up on the 1st of May.
Yeah. So I'm going to, this is scary as well. See, putting myself out there. So I've got a radio show today. I've got a university lecture or seminar on the 1st of May at Bolton University. I will be speaking to them about tackling illiteracy in the community, but in a fun, engaging and innovative way. And I think that people think that learning has to be boring. Yeah. And it really, really doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely one of those students that I always switch off. So I'm very much hands-on, very much about movement. I'm not a very good listener, and I'm not good if someone stands there and speaks to me. It just goes through one ear and comes out the other. So I'm trying to see if I can raise awareness to make sure that people know that they can be fun, and they can be innovative, and children are learning in different ways nowadays, and we need to keep up with the times. Because if we don't keep up with the times with them, then we'll lose them.
And I think the key there is making it fun. Because exactly. If it's fun, they will engage.
Yeah, learning should be fun.
Yeah.
You know, I dance around with my daughter and we listen to Bruno Mars. And I know that people are thinking, Bruno Mars? But it's fun. Yeah. And she knows some of the lyrics. And she's two. And she's learning language. You can learn language anywhere and any way possible. Yeah. You could talk to her, or I talk to her in the garden, and we talk about flowers, and we go to the park, and I speak to her in the car, and that's all learning. It doesn't have to be formalized. You don't have to sit in a classroom with the chairs and tables all linear and the teacher at the front. You can learn anywhere. I'm learning today.
Yep.
Are you?
Yep. Absolutely.
I hope you guys do.
Every day is a school day.
Yeah.
And you're appearing on a TV show, a Kent TV show.
Yeah.
As well.
Did I tell you about that? How did you know about that? Yeah. Oh. See, I haven't even finalised that yet.
Tell me more.
So I'm coming, I think I'm going on the, I think, KMTV.
Okay.
Yeah, that's on the 8th of May. But I need to find out more details about that. See, you are a man of knowledge.
Soon you'll be a household name.
Yeah, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
So a very exciting year ahead for you.
It really is.
I'm very, very pleased for you. So just to summarise, Rebecca, I mean, who would be your ideal client? Who are you looking for specifically, or who are you looking to be introduced to? Let's just go over that one more time.
Yeah, I would love to be introduced to libraries, job centres, young offenders, I would say other organisations that deal with young people, and I'd love to be introduced to head teachers, although I know that their budgets are really tight. Mm-hmm. And I've just had an unfortunate dropout recently, actually, because of staffing. And I know that budgets in schools are really, really tight. But if they prioritise this, then I do think it will have a really, really positive effect on their results.
Yeah.
And I know that schools are results hungry, but that's the society that we live in. But it will have an effect on their results. And just because it's not directly linked to what they're learning for their exam, it has a holistic overview on their achievement.
And these are head teachers of senior schools?
I would say primary schools.
And primary schools
five,
as well.
Year 5 and 6 is a really important transition to secondary school.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really, really important stage. And children are maturing a lot quicker now as well. Mm. So even though we think that they're year 5 and 6 and they're not ready to learn about other things, they're really ready.
Absolutely. I mean, I do sugar presentations in junior schools.
Right, okay.
And I go and talk to years 3, 4, 5 and 6.
Right, yeah.
And I find that sort of year 5, year 6, they're old enough to take in the information.
They're bright,
And to actually apply the knowledge, but they don't pretend to know it all.
Exactly.
It's a really, I think it is a pivotal time
and
in their life.
And they're sponges. And I know that sounds silly, but they want to learn more.
No,
they
I agree.
To absorb that.
Yeah.
And I think if we continue to baby them, then they won't be ready for secondary school. So I would say primary school, year 5 and 6, all the way through secondary.
Yeah.
And even early college as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. So if people want to get in contact with you, Rebecca, what's the best route to get hold of you?
I'm very social. So you can get in touch with us on the Facebook page, which is Jigsaw EDU. I'm also on LinkedIn under Daniel Rebecca.
Okay.
Or you can just go onto the website and there will be some telephone numbers and contact details there. And the website's www.jigsaw-education.com.
Super. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I don't want to sound like a cliche, but it's been an education for me.
I hope so.
And that and that link between education and literacy and physical health and mental health, I think, is so strong. So it's been great. Thank you.
I agree. Thank you very much. Take care.
After the break, we are going to be having a chat about Helicobacter pylori. But for the moment, we'll take you into the break with a song, a classic from Stevie Wonder.
He's a man with a plan. got a counterfeit dollar in his hand. He's Nestra, know-it-all. Playing hard, talking fast, making sure that he won't be the last. He's Nestra, know-it-all. Makes a deal with a smile. The biggest mouth, he's Mr. Know-it-all. When you tell him he's living fast, he will say, what do you know? If you had my kind of cash, you'd have more than one place to go. Any place so much you pay. He's Mr. Know-it-all. If he shakes on a bed, he's the kind of dude that won't pay his debt. Oh, he's Mr. Know-it-all. When you say that he's living wrong,
Stevie Wonder and Mr. Know-it-all. Quick reminder of the show's social media feeds on Twitter at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, The Health Matters Radio Show. You can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And you can also find this show and previous shows on the show's iTunes podcast. If you go to iTunes and type in The Health Matters Radio Show, you can subscribe there. And again, if you'd like to contact me individually and away from social media, then please feel free to do so via my website. So for the next 5 minutes, we're going to talk to you about Helicobacter pylori. Now, it's a little bacteria with a little spiral-shaped tail that many people have never heard of, but actually causes a lot of health issues. And what it does is it attaches to the lining of the stomach and sometimes the small intestine, and it thrives and multiplies. And around 40% of people in the UK have Helicobacter pylori bacteria in their stomach, okay? But it doesn't cause them any problems. And of that 40% of people that have the bacteria in their stomach, around 80 to 90% will never have any issues. But it can cause problems if it gets a little bit active. And actually, Helicobacter pylori infection is the leading cause of stomach ulcers, which are often called peptic ulcers, and also gastritis, which is inflammation of the stomach. And around 90% of people that get ulcers will have Helicobacter pylori infection. Now, the good thing is it can be treated, but there are symptoms that build up to the condition becoming very, very serious that I'm going to cover in a few moments. And one of those conditions is severe indigestion. Now, we all suffer from indigestion from time to time. And, you know, it comes and it goes. It can be because we've eaten the wrong things. It can be because we've eaten perhaps too quickly. But if you have persistent severe indigestion that does not go away, even with medication, that can be a symptom of Helicobacter pylori infection. And as I mentioned, you know, indigestion can be caused by lots of different things. So if you do suffer from indigestion, it doesn't mean that you're going to get a stomach ulcer or that you've got Helicobacter pylori infection. But if it's persistent, then it's definitely worth going and having a chat to your doctor. And doctors, for years and years, I used to think that ulcers were caused, or stomach ulcers were caused by stress and spicy food, smoking and other lifestyle and dietary habits. But in 1982, Helicobacter pylori was discovered, and they found that the major cause of stomach ulcers and gastrointestinal stress and distress was the Helicobacter pylori bacteria. So it enters your body, it attacks the lining of your stomach, and the lining of your stomach protects your stomach from the acid that's inside it. And once this bacteria has done enough damage, the acid can get through the stomach lining, which protects the stomach, and that leads to ulcerations. And these ulcers can bleed, they can cause other infections, and they can cause digestive issues as well. And you can get Helicobacter pylori from food that's not cooked properly, from raw food particularly, from water that either isn't clean or you're not used to. If you go to foreign countries, sometimes you can pick up the bacteria from the water in other countries. Utensils that haven't been cleaned properly, you can pick up the Helicobacter pylori bacteria there. I mean, generally speaking, it's not so common in the UK, but it does happen where we get ulcerations caused by Helicobacter pylori. But generally speaking, it's in developing countries that it's becoming more of a problem. And in those countries, it can be a killer because they haven't got access necessarily to medication to deal with the infection. Lots of children will pick up Helicobacter pylori during childhood, and it will lay dormant throughout their whole life. But adults can get it too, and you do need to listen out to these symptoms. So just to recap, the symptoms are severe, ongoing indigestion that does not respond to over-the-counter medication or any other medication. And if you have got an ulcer, the symptoms of that might be a dull burning pain in your belly. The pain might come and go. You'll probably feel it the most when your stomach is empty. It can last for a few minutes to a few hours, and it generally will feel better after you eat or drink or you take an antacid. But if you've got that constant pain, that dull burning pain in your belly, then it might be worth having a chat to your doctor. And when you talk to your doctor, Helicobacter pylori infection is easily diagnosed these days, generally speaking through a blood test, but they can also diagnose it through a breath test as well, and through stool tests. And if they want to have a look, they can do an endoscope, they can put a tube down your throat and put a camera down there and see what's going on. It's also worth noting that Helicobacter pylori, whilst it is the cause of most ulcers, a small amount of ulcers can be caused by things like aspirin and other painkillers like ibuprofen, as well as other drugs prescribed for other conditions. So if you do have pain in your stomach or continual indigestion, it's also worth talking to your doctor to find out if it's the drugs that are causing those symptoms, or perhaps drugs that are causing the ulceration as opposed to Helicobacter pylori infection. But as I say, it's easily treated these days, but it's a bit like type 2 diabetes. You get the symptoms and you ignore them. And when you ignore them, it causes bigger problems as you go on. So if you can relate to those symptoms, the dull burning pains, or perhaps the continuous indigestion, then please don't ignore it, because it can lead on to much more serious issues as time progresses. Talk to your doctor and take it from there. So it's 11:57. We're going to wrap the show up now. I'd like to thank Rebecca one more time for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been great to have you on the show. A quick reminder of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Please take a look at the site and feel free to contact me if any content of the site is of interest. I'm looking for introductions into junior schools in Kent as well, for me to go and give my time for free and go and talk to kids about sugar. So if you can put me in contact with any head teachers, please do so. And if you'd like to come on the show as a guest, as Rebecca has done today, then please make contact with me and we will take it from there. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. So until the same time next week, stay happy, stay healthy, have a great week, and I will catch you next Monday.
The heart is a bloom.